Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Poet Runner. Today we have Billy Burgos, poet, artist, and friend, and we also have Richard, my co-host, who is the intellectual part of this interview.
I thought that was you.
No, I'm the muscle.
Yeah, he's the muscle. Well, we are talking to Billy Burgos, who Raphael just introduced. His book that I know of is Elegy to an Unknown Tree, that is published by Writ Large Press, and it is still available. But first, Billy, let me ask you, what is the... I know that you were as an accomplished an artist as you are a poet, and I know that you mm-hmm. work in pen and ink, you work in graphite, you work in paint. How do these two arts relate? And listeners, Billy is a master of both of them. As we can't show you any of his visual work, but he will read some of his poems later on. So, Billy, what is the connection between them?
Richard, I have tried to keep those two worlds as unconnectable as I possibly could.
That's interesting.
Poetry, yeah. Poetry for me has always been like dredging up soot from the bottom of a dirty bottle, or dredging the bottom of the ocean for me. Like, it's never been an easy task. Poetry for me goes, well, typically in the past, which is my last book, poetry for me was like, I guess the only way I can describe it is kind of like going to a confessional, going to church, maybe. Something very dark and deep. And it takes a lot for me to go to that place. And probably the reason why I don't go so often as I used to previously. Art for me, the painting, the drawing, the sketching, it's always been something more, I don't know, holistic maybe. It's a place I go very easily. Ever since I was a child, it's something I go to almost to meditate, or a meditative place, a very safe place. Somewhere I almost don't even have to think. I can just go there, and it's very natural and very easy. And for me, it's a very calming thing to do. So those two worlds for me are so separate, and usually when one is asleep, the other one is wide awake. I can rarely do both things at the same time. So for me, they've always been a very separate art for me, and usually if I'm doing a lot of sketching, drawing, for instance, like recently I finished two children's books that delved a lot of into my Central American culture, dealing with Central American folklore. And
oh yeah, that's right. What are the names of those two books, by the way?
Well, The Life and Time of El Cipitio was the first, where we took that myth of El Cipitio, which is it's a Salvadorian mythological child man that a lot of people have seen, and you know, there's YouTube videos of people that still see this kid. Very much alive, and, you know, and they usually see him at night, and he's kind of a character that it means different things to different people. But my friend Randy Perrotto, who was a guy I met really in middle school, and we reconnected late in life, maybe about 10 years ago now. And he's from El Salvador. And we would have these conversations about the different Central American mythologies that would literally cross the borders. And when they would, these characters would change names. But typically, the storyline was always the same. So, you know, we started talking about a book, and he wanted to make it something more adult-driven. And that was the first book he did, which dealt with the kind of raunchy side of this character and how he eventually migrates to America and becomes president, you know. And so, you know, I did the cover for that book for him, which was very successful for him. It did really well, to the point where we thought, you know, since that book was so raunchy, why don't we do something a little more comical for the children that could take that same character and make it into something that kids could relate to? And really, we thought about it, and there aren't a lot of children books that people from our culture can relate to, especially the children. So we did a more tame version, which had illustrations that kind of dealt with the same issue, like him coming across the border, going from El Salvador and his travels through Central America, so actually he makes it here to America and actually ends up beating Donald Trump and becoming president of the United States.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's nice.
Yeah. And it was really cool to do that book with him, but it took so much of my energy to do those.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, there was another. We kind of delved into the comic book side of that again and created a this kid's mythical mother, who we thought would be great if we made her, because in the storyline she's a little on the evil side, but we took her and made her into like a anti-typical superhero. And so those three books really took so much of my energy in the past few years that I really kind of put poetry on the back burner, I guess. But you know, I'm always writing. But for me, the art, when it becomes the central theme of my life, usually I can't do too much writing. Like poetry takes so much. I don't know about you or some of the other poets, but poetry takes so much of my energy, mentally, physically, emotionally. It touches on all those aspects of me as a person, and typically I'm not a very nice person to be around when I'm writing poetry. And you know, I'm recently married within the past few years, so you know, and my wife, who isn't a part of the poetry world, she's, you know, that side of me she rarely sees, because I need to put so much energy towards it. And I really have been in a place where I didn't want to delve into that, dredge up anything from poetry that often as I used to before. Because if you remember, my last book was really, the theme of it was grief, you know, grieving.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how grief is similar, whether you're grieving the loss of someone in death, the loss of a relationship, the loss of a life that you used to once live, and how I connected all those different forms of grief and kind of just stuffed it into this very, very heavy book. So I really have been in this mental state of rediscovering what I want to move forward with poetry, you know, and kind of trying to rediscover myself as a poet the past few years. So that's kind of where I've been with the both of those different worlds.
So yeah, well, of course, you know, they say that there are different abilities assigned to different sides of the brain, and the verbal side is not the same as the visual side. So there is that, of course, there is that separation. So you're drawing on actually a different biology even when you are working in the visual arts as opposed to the literary arts, which, of course, are all about language, and language is laid out in a linear, logical fashion. And the visual arts are sort of what they call totalistic. You see it, you see all at once, and you put down the details of your perception. And I can see that it clearly it draws on two different talents, but at the same time, you're right when you say that poets are certainly emotionally invested in their writing, when they draw on their own experience or the things that they have witnessed directly, which can be very wrenching. I recall that you wrote once that the poet acts as a skilled docent leading us through an unknown gallery, and that, of course, is itself formidable because indeed that is an unknown gallery, and the docent, him or herself, is discovering what is in that gallery as he takes others with them. So can be scary. Sure, I understand that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like I rarely pick up my book. In the past few years, maybe once or twice I might open it up and delve into it, but it's very hard, even to this day, to really kind of open it up and read some of those poems. That can put me in a weird place mentally. And like I said, if I'm sketching or if I'm working on a book cover or a portrait, it really does take my mind away from that and kind of has me there for a very long time. So poetically, I think my writing has changed a bit. I don't know. I mean, it's not like I submit that often. Once in a while, I might get asked to join in an anthology or something, but rarely do I share much in my poetry like I used to. And that's because I'm still experimenting personally with where I'm going poetically. But it's always nicer to be able to read some work and to kind of let people know that I'm still here, you know, I'm still writing. I think people mostly these days see me as an artist, but I still write, still there, still doing that.
Well, can I prevail upon you to read something for us? Okay. Well, there is a. I don't know if you. I don't know what you've got in front of you, but maybe I should let you do the selection. I was going to make some selections, but it might be a hassle to pull these up for you.
No, just give me the heads up, and I'll see if I have that poem laying around.
Well, there was one poem that I really liked was The Figurative Heart, which really addresses some of the things that we have been talking about just now.
Uh-huh. Let me see if I could pull that one out of the book. I hate that air. When I used to do my show, I remember that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please somebody say something.
Oh. Or, you know, hit us with what you with anything you like. Anything you like.
Yeah. Let me get going on something here. This one is a newer one called Restless Leg Syndrome. Falling asleep to the boom of my voice is not a bad thing, you tell me. Legs double dutch while trying to find you in a dream about cake. Toes dip into the frosting or in the thick of cumulus clouds on some false horizon. The next morning, I half wake, search for your ghost in a thick sheet mound. Your night smell is pungent on a duvet, legs still caught in the tangle of a unicorn's mane. I can hear what is meant to be you, cha-cha-chaing at some wedding I believe to be the extravagant one we never had. You wake me from our middle school dance with a simple kiss, rubbing away the spell with some prayer about eggs and bacon, about your mother still in grief, about the story I helped you drift off to, holding hands, eating corn nuts, then dancing another restless night away.
Well, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful, Billy. That's something new, then.
Yes, that's something new.
And it, it's, you know, it really, what I like about that poem was it has so many nice details in it that really bring it to life and put you there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there is a sweetness to the poem that is not sentimental. And I like that about it too. I mean, it's really hard, you know, when you write this kind of poem, it's really hard to steer a line between becoming saccharine or becoming ironic, and maintaining sincerity. Because, you know, really, that was one of the things you were talking about earlier. One of the things that really is hard for a poet is to express sincerity, because you're opening yourself up. So sometimes the recourse is to irony, and sometimes it's to sugarcoating things. And this is right down the middle. It's not sentimental. It's not ironic. And you can tell that it is from the heart. And it's really nice, really beautiful, Billy. Yeah, I like
that. Thank you. And I think that's the border I've been trying to kind of walk that line with. Like often I'll think about poems I wrote early on, and to me personally, I'm very critical of my own work, probably more than anyone else could ever be, whether it be my art or my poetry. And to me, those early works of mine were so heavy-handed a lot of times that it was hard for me to see the human side of a lot of the poems I would write. Me personally, I don't know how, you know, people have written me emails and letters saying, you know, how touched they were and felt that humanity in them. But for me personally, it always seemed like it was very hard for that to sift through all the heaviness of the poem. So, you know, because I'm in a better place emotionally these days, I think that human side is coming in more into my work. And I always don't want to be sappy, but at the same time, I still want to have that depth to it. So I'm glad to hear that it's kind of going down the center of that line. And that's really what I've always wanted, is for people to see the humanity and the normalness in what I'm writing. So
you've succeeded beautifully in that poem. And of course, anybody who has a spouse can share those emotions too. That's one of the things that, one of the beauties of poetry, one of the things that makes it in my view, the highest genre of writing is that ability to make your human experience universal. It's particular to you. You were the one having it. But other people who read a poem like that can share in that. It's like, you know, our common humanity. And poems that hit on that are really valuable to me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some of the...
Go ahead. No, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the Eulogy to an Unknown Tree poems were harsh, bleak, but at the same time, they too were like, you know, laying your heart bare, which is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, for other people who cannot articulate those feelings, it is a comfort to them. So, I mean, the struggle that you had in writing those poems, the pain that you may have felt, I think, provided relief for other people because they know that here is somebody else who is experiencing the same things that I have and is giving back to me who cannot express myself. But reading this guy, I feel a relief in knowing that somebody else out there has had those feelings, and I think that's valuable too.
Yeah, and you know, I used to do so many readings back when that book came out that I would often hear that, you know, from people. And I always enjoyed hearing that from people that were new to poetry. I know poetry doesn't pay us anything, but hearing those stories from someone who doesn't come from the poetry world, that was like getting $1 million, you know, slapped in your hand, to know that something that took so much for me to even get out, that it could help someone like that deal with whatever grief they were dealing with, that was the payoff for me. So, you know, what, that was 2012, and I haven't written a book. Probably have enough work to write 3 books at where I am right now, but I think I am one of those artists that I love to produce, but I'm not very good at the follow through. I always needed a guy like this guy named Rafael Alvarado to kind of be the guy that could take that work and take it to where it needed to go to, but. You know, he's busy, I hear, running marathons these days, so I don't know, you know. I don't know.
Oh, well, maybe he could make some time for you again.
All right. Get crapped on for being healthy.
What's that?
I get crapped on for being healthy.
I probably have enough work for about at least a couple books in me. I just need to take the time and put the energy towards building those books, but it's time. I think I've grieved enough and it's time to move on. But that's pretty much what I planned on reading, are these poems that I'm trying to put together into something cohesive.
Well, you know, it's definitely, you know, I certainly encourage you to do that. I mean, you know, no pressure, but, you know, we would, there's an audience for this kind of poetry, especially now, in all honesty, especially now.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
I'd be happy to hustle it for you and get you a deal.
Yeah, there you go.
That
would help. That would help. You know, and another thing for me, Richard, is I think I have also so much work artistically that people are always approaching me and saying, hey, when are you going to put all these things together in a book? So it's like, okay, I've concentrated on doing these children's books that I kind of have one in the pipe for myself also. For me, I have all these projects. It's just the follow through that's always been the issue for me. So, something's coming. Something's there. It's just a matter of when.
The most important thing is that you are creating. That's the most important thing.
Oh, always. Always.
I mean, that you,
if you know anything about me, you know that that's not one of my issues. I put out so many and you know, with the way social media is these days, just being able to maintain your Instagram, your TikTok, and your Facebook, that alone takes so much time and energy.
Yeah.
Like I just creating art reels where I actually set up my my iPhone on a tripod and you know, actually do a time lapse of a sketch I'm doing. That can be so nerve wracking. People just don't know how nerve wracking that is. It's like,
I bet it can. But listeners, and those reels, by the way, are fascinating. They're really great to see. And, you know, just to see the blank sheet fill with an image,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is really fascinating. I mean, it's enjoyable, too, to see creation appear before your eyes. And I think it gives a lot of people who are not connected to the visual arts, it's a way of connecting because you see how they're produced. And I think that's a great gift that you're giving to people, Billy. So where can, you know, you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, you're on TikTok. Is it just Billy Burgos that we should look for there?
Pretty much. My TikTok is probably the most. Let me tell you what my handle is on there.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, on Instagram, I'm Bill the Artist. That's pretty much, most people know that. I don't even think I could pull up TikTok while I'm on the phone, but it's Billy the Artist 2, so number 2, Billy the Artist 2, and that's my TikTok handle.
All right. Well,
but,
listeners,
you know,
listeners.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say. Now, listeners, those are definitely worth checking out. They are not endless. They are like, you know, maybe a minute or more, but they are really wonderful, wonderful to look at. And those of you who say to yourself when you see a finished work, "How did he do that?" Now you can hear it, your answer. I mean, you can see it appear before your eyes. So,
yeah, and honestly, that's been where most of my traffic has been coming from, is the art. And if you are anyone that tries to stay relevant, you kind of are driven by where you're most relevant. These days, and for me, it's really been the art, and like I said earlier, it's probably the easiest place for me to go to mentally, and like it's almost as if I don't even, honestly, art, sketching and painting, those things come so easy to me that I could almost go on autopilot and do it. That's how easy it is. But at the same time, I think it can cause you, me personally, to be a bit lazy about the other aspects of what I'm good at, which is, you know, say, putting together a poetry collection. So, you know, like I said, those it can be a blessing and a curse.
Well, that is the dilemma. That's the dilemma that all artists face. And we're just about out of time, but I wanted to. I remembered this statement when you were talking earlier. I forget who said it. It might have been Man Ray, but he said something like, "Art, the creating of it, is the first thing to attend to in an artist's life." Now, notice he did not say the publishing of it or the showing of it, but the creating of it was first and foremost. And as long as you are creating, you're going to have art there that sooner or later you will share with other people in whatever circumstances may come up, whether Raphael prods you to put together another poetry book and gets you a deal on it, or one of our listeners follows you on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook and said, "Hey, I'd like to give this guy a show." So there we are.
And honestly, Richard, I'll be 100% honest with you, and I've never been a cocky person with my art, but I've always had a level of confidence because I know the amount of energy I put towards, whether it be poetry or art. I put 110% into everything I do. So I've always felt, you know, the work is good enough, and when I'm ready to produce something, a collection either of the art or the poetry, that I know that there would be an audience for it. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily feel that way about my work, but I've never been I've never been weak-minded with that part of it. Like, I know that once I put something together, there'll be an audience there, and it's only proven true in the past, so I'm never worried about that, because I know the energy and the time that I put into my work is will pay off on that end of it. If people take that the wrong way, then so be it, but
No. If anybody can make that statement, it's yourself, Billy. Absolutely. I mean, I've seen your work over maybe almost two decades now. And you have developed as an artist, both as a visual artist and as a poet. And that new poem you read today, it was a wonderful poem. Anyway, I want to thank you for your time. We've been talking to Billy Burgos. His book of grim poetry, Eulogy for an Unknown Tree, is available from Writ Large Press. As he's told us today, he's sort of moved on from that space, and he's in a better space. But do check that book out. Check him out on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And, Billy, thanks again for your time, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Definitely. Same here, Richard. All right, Ross, you have a good one, too, man.
All right. Thank you again for listening to Poet Runner. This has been another great Poet Runner. Thank you. And come back on next Monday. We'll be interviewing another poet. Thank you.